It's the Honey Cooking Corner on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good morning and welcome to the Cooking Corner. Thank you for joining me today. I'm excited for the summer weather, but I believe it's going to be quite hot this week. So, and it's been quite a fun week for me, especially. My son Darren got engaged to his beautiful, amazing English rose, Hannah Ashkenazi. And so now all my lorry birds have left the nest, and I must say I'm battling to cook for two. In fact, I can't wait for Shabbos. So that when all the family comes around and gets together, I don't know, I just seem to be able to cook for so many. And now all of a sudden, my husband and I are looking at each other and saying, should we just have a toasted cheese? Anyway, so before I carry on, let me explain why you may hear the accidental word being mispronounced this week, because Dafka of all weeks, I had to have some dental work done, which has left me in a 3-month temporary implant situation. So those who've had implants know the story. They know exactly what I'm talking about. So if I sound a little weird, a little tongue-tied, you know that that's exactly what it is. It's all dental. So it's Hanukkah around the corner. Yummy fried food without feeling guilty. I wanted to share some lovely fried recipes with you. I also have a special guest in the studio, and she has all the answers to those varsity days of takeouts are not necessary and easy, wholesome cooked meals are needed. And, well, she'll tell you a little bit later about how it all started for her. So we'll be chatting to Annabel Freer, whose daughters also went off to university away from home. And although she loved having those frequent calls from her kids about, Ma, how do I make this? How do I make that? She decided that she was actually going to create a personal recipe book for her student daughters. And suddenly her book was, they asked if they could publish this book. And Annabel became the author of Help, There's a Stove in My Kitchen. And it became so popular that Help, There's a Guest at My Table followed soon thereafter. So for all those getting married, moving out of home, going to university, don't want to get takeouts and just want to make simple but hearty meals that don't cost the earth, this is your answer. So where are we actually going to start? I think we're going to start with a nice Hanukkah recipe. Now, I've been playing around a lot lately with all different sorts of flours and rye flours and chickpea flours and having a lot of fun. And seeing as Hanukkah is, what's it, about 19 days away, I think. I can't believe how time flies. I mean, it was yesterday, it was Rosh Hashanah. Now, Hanukkah, so first night Hanukkah is Sunday the 2nd of December, right? It's early this year. And that's when I do quite a bit of entertaining, and it's fun, easy, chilled, relaxed, entertaining, and fry up a lot of things. So what I'm going to do for one of my nights, I like to have little theme nights. I'm going to have an Israeli night, and I've been working on homemade falafel. And this is the one that got the thumbs up from the Lurie jury. And it goes like this. You will need 2 cups of dried chickpeas. You can use tinned chickpeas if you want, but then I would use 4 tins of drained chickpeas. This makes about 24 falafel balls. Then I would drain the chickpeas, but just keep the juice aside. Now, the most economical way, of course, of doing this is with dried chickpeas, and you would soak them overnight in 1 teaspoon of bicarbonate of soda. Cover it with cling wrap, and you just leave it for about 12 to 18 hours until they get really nice and soft. Then you'd need 1 onion to dice up, 6 to 8 cloves of garlic. I love garlic, so there's your garlic. If you want less, I don't know, falafel needs garlic. You need to walk around smelling of falafel. Then you need about half a cup of finely chopped Italian parsley. You can use coriander if you want. I know some people dislike it intensely. So it's either Italian parsley or fresh coriander. 2 teaspoons of salt. You may have to add a little bit more. You'll try it at the end. 1 teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper. 2 teaspoons of cumin. 1/2 teaspoon of ground coriander spice. Now, although you're using the fresh coriander, somehow the ground coriander spice just brings it together. 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne pepper. You just want it to be a little spicy. And 2 tablespoons of flour. Now, at this point, if you want to make it gluten-free, as I did, you can put, 2 tablespoons of potato flour in. So I continue now with my falafel. As I said, we would need 2 tablespoons of flour, or you can use potato flour or corn flour for a gluten-free version, and 2 teaspoons of lemon juice. Now, as I said, we soaked our beans, our chickpeas, in 1 teaspoon of bicarbonate of soda, and we left that for about 12 to 18 hours. You want them to be quite soft. You can boil them. If you find that they're not soft enough, you can boil them for about an hour. And then what you do is you put it into your food processor with a blade, and you pulse it a few times until it's all sort of comes together. And you don't want to over process it. You don't want it to be smooth. You actually want it to have a little bit of texture. I find that if you have texture, it's more aerated, and it's a lovely soft falafel ball. And then you would fry that. If you have a deep fry, you can fry it on 350 degrees Fahrenheit for about 5 minutes, just until they're lovely and brown and crisp. If you don't have a deep fryer, then what you can do, instead of rolling them into small balls, you know, just smaller than a ping pong ball, what you could do is you could also roll them and then just flatten them, and then you fry them in a frying pan with some oil, and then you just turn them over onto the other side, and they're lovely and they're just as crispy. And you can serve them in beautiful hot pita. If you make your own, that's wonderful. Otherwise, we've got some wonderful bakeries out there where you can get gorgeous pita. So I think we should go to our guest before I share another exciting Chanukah recipe. Let's go to our guest, Annabel Freer. About a year or two back, I went to a conference. And a young boy came up to me, a young man, should I say, came up to me and said to me, "I know what you need to do. You need to write a book, and you need to address it to university students. You need to do something along those lines. People like me who've never ever been into the kitchen," and there are a lot of us. He said, "We've never been into the kitchen, and we actually don't know what to make. And we are tired of takeaways, and we are tired of hinting to friends that we want to go there for lunch and for supper or whatever. And that's what you need to do." Okay. And then along came Annabel Freer. Well, what a delight it was, because she came along with her first book called Help, There's a Stove in My Kitchen. And so without further ado, let me introduce Annabel to everybody. Annabel, welcome to the Cooking Corner.
Thank you very much.
And tell us a little bit about your first book and how that came about.
Yes. Well, it really came about because I have 2 daughters, and they were both at university. But the first one, they were in res, you know, for the first year, and then when they went into digs, I realized that they actually hadn't got the home recipes and all the things that they love to make at home with me. And they could either ring me every 5 minutes, which I'd be very happy about, or else they could have a book, which I was, you know, I was busy compiling some recipes for them. Yes. And so that's how it really got started. And originally I was just going to print off a couple of copies for each of them. And here you are, here's mum's family recipes and things that they know and like. And it ended up bigger than that. So I was very, very fortunate that then Random House Strake took over the whole manuscript, and they said that they would produce a lovely book for me, which they certainly did.
They certainly did. It's an absolutely wonderful book.
The idea really was that to keep it very simple.
Right.
So it starts with absolute basics. So the first few pages probably how to boil an egg, and even getting organized and a few little tips and so on. But the main focus was to keep it as simple and quick as possible, all the recipes, and in budget. So nothing was terribly expensive. What I did was I started simple and then progressed into something so that anybody, mums, could use the recipes. Young people moving out, but the idea was to encourage them to be creative. Take my recipes. So I gave, for instance, in the quiche recipes, there were a variety of fillings. So you had your basics, your crust and your custard, and then you had a variety of fillings so that you could add what you like. And then it was an encouragement to make it their own and be as creative as possible. I always think that people pick up recipes and they think, oh, I think I'm going to add this of my own. And that's really what I'm trying to get them to do.
Yes.
But it does go into some pretty decent recipes which you could use at home
cucumber
for your family. Yes.
And nice simple, stuff. As you say, simple recipes where people can just enjoy entertaining.
Yes.
And then, of course, that was such a popular book that we went on to help. There's a guest at my table. Now, what I loved about this book was how you shared different tips and how to decorate your tables and how, it's such a simple thing. It's your beautiful idea with a crudité to put them into a little sort of flower pot. People, if they get hungry, can eat from there. But it's decorative, simple, and cost-effective, because you don't have to eat the flowers. You can eat the fruit and vegetables.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, but okay. So now a couple of chef's tricks and tips that you have for us. Searing meat in a pan. Now, this is something that always comes up. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because of meat and me being associated with the butchery and whatever. People come up with different ideas about meat, searing it and leaving it to rest. So I had a guest the other day on the radio and he was saying, nonsense, you don't need to leave it to rest. Okay, how do you feel about that? I see on your face it was a bit, ooh.
You definitely need to leave it to rest. What you're doing, when you're cooking, you're searing, is you're trying to seal the juices in. But you need to give it time to rest, because the juices would otherwise, if you cut straight through the meat when you've cooked it, all those lovely juices would ooze out. And you'd lose half of them on the plate. And you've really got to let that time for the juices to go back into the meat itself instead of just concentrating in one place. And it gives it a much better overall finish.
Uh-huh.
So that's my view.
So that's your view.
Yes.
And just, a couple of, I like the way you do the three P's, prepare, plate, prepare and plate. And I think it's quite important, unfortunately, people say to me, well, how many people are coming tonight? I don't know. I really don't know. It could be anything from 15 to 20 to 25. But, as my brother said to somebody the other day, I was working with a stylist, and she said, but Sharon, how do you cater if you don't know how many people are coming? And you know, as my brother said, well, if she's cooking for 15, she can cook for 20. It makes no difference. How do you feel about that?
I think it's, you know, you must have a fair idea. If you've got a dinner party,
yes,
and you're having a sit-down meal, then I think, you know, it's pretty essential to know how much meat you're actually going to prepare, or the starters, how far everything's got to go.
Right. And now, let's say you're planning a dinner party for about 10, 12 people.
Mm.
How do you prepare and plan the whole thing? What would you do?
Well, I'd first of all try and get the numbers straight. I would decide, you know, okay, what am I going to make? Is it going to be a three course, or is it going to be casual braai with some little snackies whilst we're sitting around having drinks? But if it was a sit-down dinner party, I would plan a three-course dinner. And so I would choose a starter, depending on the season. How is it winter? Is it summer? What's
yes.
available? And then make a nice starter. A lot of them can be made in advance.
What is the most recent starter you made?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Caught you off guard.
yes, I do make, like, the pate, which comes out of the first book. I do hummus and dips
yes.
like that.
And you sort of lay them out on the table in little bowls, and
yes.
people can just lean across and help themselves. And
yes, you can have that. You
right.
can have a sort of pick and eat.
Right.
One of my favourite starters right now, which I
yes.
do quite a lot, is my spinach and avocado cheesecake.
Oh,
so
please
that
share
one,
that recipe.
yeah, that one is one of my favourites. I'd say it's probably a signature dish.
Okay, so we've got to have that one.
So that one comes in the snack section.
Yes.
Because it's good for snacks as well, if you want to, you know, share it amongst many people. I have
yes.
made this one stretch, although it's meant for 8. I have stretched it to 12 people very happily.
101.9 High FM. Welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm chatting to Annabelle Freer, who is the author of Help There's a Stove in My Kitchen and Help There's a Guest at My Table. And I'm just going to share Annabelle's favorite spinach and avocado cheesecake, which is no bake, and you can stick it in the fridge. And I actually made it the other night, so I can share some of my experiences with it. This is suitable for buffet table or as a cold starter, and it's a beautiful cheesecake that can be made a day ahead and simply turned out when needed. So you'll need 125 grams of savory crackers. The recipe will be put up on the website. I've been very good. I've given my recipes in already. 125 grams savory crackers. I used salty crackers. You can use any savory cracker that you want. I wouldn't use cream crackers. You want something with a little bit of spice and salt in it. Then you need about 95 grams of butter melted. And Annabelle used a teaspoon of gelatin powder. Now, I know sometimes it's a bit difficult for us to get kosher gelatin. I know some places have, some haven't. You can use agar-agar. I didn't. And what I did was, yes, use it, 1 tablespoon of gelatin powder with 3/4 cup of strong vegetable or Purev chicken stock. If you can't get the gelatin, I left out the gelatin and I'd just reduced my vegetable stock to 1/2 cup so that it wasn't too liquidy. 1 ripe, large tomato, halved lengthways and with the pip removed, obviously, and 100 grams of fresh baby spinach rinsed and the thick stalks removed. Now, I know that Woolworths do it, I think it's in 200-gram packs, so you would need half or double up, or just put a little bit more spinach in if you feel like it. And then you'd need 1/2 cup of crumbled feta cheese, one clove of garlic, I put two, one tablespoon of lemon juice, and then I used the Woolworths full cream cream cheese, full fat cream cheese, the 1 by 250 gram packs. You want the full cream cheese. I'm not sure about the other cream cheeses, but this is the one that worked. There wasn't any excess water in it, and it was lovely. And you'll also need 1 by 250 gram tub of creme fraiche and a handful of micro herbs, which are lovely, and you just sprinkle them on top for garnishing. So what you do is you lightly spray a 22 centimeter spring form cake tin with cooking oil, and you line with baking paper. Then you just crush the crackers, blitz them in the blender, or crush them in a mixing bowl. And back to the recipe. So we have mixed the crackers, and we put them into, crush them either with a rolling pin or you're in your Magimix, and you mix in the butter, and you press the mixture with the back of a spoon into the base of the cake tin, and you leave it to chill while you prepare the filling. Now, if you're going to use the gelatine at this stage, mix the gelatine with the stock, the vegetable or the puree of chicken stock, and you just microwave it for 45 seconds to a minute. Don't let it boil. And then just allow the gelatine to dissolve, or stand the cup in hot water and stir until dissolved, and you leave to cool for 5 minutes. Then you scoop the avocado flesh into a blender, add the spinach, the feta, the garlic, the lemon juice, the cream cheese, creme fraiche, and stock mixture, and you blitz it until it's smooth, and you've got to sort of push it down. Annabelle was saying earlier that we have to keep pushing the mixture down with a long spatula, season it, pour it over the biscuit base, and you chill it for about 4 hours overnight. And the beautiful thing about this is that the spinach doesn't lose its color. It has a wonderful green coloring to this cheesecake. And then when you're ready to serve it, remove it from the cake tin, run a thin knife blade around the edge if necessary, and carefully transfer it onto a serving platter, and then you just garnish it with the micro herbs. Well, let's go back now to Annalene. Hi, welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's Wife, and I'm here talking to Annabelle Freer, and we are talking about her beautiful books. Her first book was There's a Stove in My Kitchen, which was a wonderful book for students who were going off to university, or just young married couples, just, you know, people going off first time in the kitchen. And then through popular demand, help, there's a guest at my table, which takes us just that little bit further to entertain in a more sort of luxurious kind of manner. Now, I must tell you, when I opened this book, the first thing I saw was this beautiful table setting, which my mother would be so proud of, because the most important thing she always said to me was, knowing how to lay a table is this bottom line. If you know how to lay a table, you're okay. And this just teaches you exactly how to do it. The soup spoon on the outside, the fish knife if you're having fish or a starter, your salad knife, then your dinner knife. The other side, fish fork, salad fork, and the dinner fork closest to the plate. On the top, your dessert spoon and a cake fork. Side bread plate with a bread knife on the side. The water glass, the red wine glass, and the white wine glass. White wine starting, followed by red wine, followed by water. That is exactly how she taught me to do it.
I'm so pleased.
So just to get this book, just to learn how to do a table setting, and how many times I remember my mother going into wherever we were, whether it was at a restaurant or somebody's home, and she'd go, they don't know how to set a table properly, do they? And I'd go, she'd say, what's wrong? And I'd have to rearrange it and show her that I'd been concentrating. So it was very exciting to see that. We're talking about 10, 12 guests at the moment, and I saw your mixed tomato salad, which is absolutely wonderful, with an anchovy dressing. Mm.
Yes.
Love that. Would you like to share that with us?
Yes. Well, I mean, you use a variety of tomatoes.
Right.
So, like the little baby, you know, the rosa.
Yes, you can get such beautiful tomatoes. At Woolworths, they have gorgeous ones.
They do. And, different colors. You can get green ones and yellow ones, little ones.
Yes.
And then you get the big, juicy Roma tomatoes,
right,
which are probably the most tasty. And so you cut the bigger ones up.
Right.
And the smaller ones you chop in half. You can keep some of them whole. The presentation, you know, is your choice entirely.
Right.
And as we know, tomato goes well with basil. And also a few nice little garlic croutons to go with it as well, which you can make by, I use ciabatta, and then fry that in a little bit of garlic and butter or oil.
Yes.
To give it beautiful,
that lovely crunch.
Nice, crunchy, tasty bit to the salad.
Right.
And then, you know, then you make the dressing with oil and I have to always remind myself what goes in here. Oh, yeah, the red onion and the anchovies and the red wine vinegar and the oil.
Right.
You chop the anchovies and you...
Could we use fish paste, anchovy fish paste?
Oh, I've never done that. I don't...
Okay.
You could, I suppose, to get the taste.
Mm.
You could get the saltiness from the taste.
Yes.
There.
I did that over some roasted vegetables and actually was... Good, I was quite surprised because I wasn't able to get kosher anchovies. Then I finally found some.
Then it might be quite expensive.
So I just used anchovy paste. I put a little bit more in and it was good.
You could try, I don't see why not. I think that would be a good idea. I really do.
Yeah, especially for, you know, people that have just got married and they have a little bit of, have a bottle of anchovy paste, a bottle of peanut butter, a bottle of Marmite in their fridge. There you go.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And then you just mix it all up and put it in the bottom of your salad bowl. Mix it there. I mean, you can save on washing up so you don't have other bowls that you're mixing in and then transferring it. And, you know, you're getting all that lovely flavour into the bowl.
Mm, love it.
So then mix in your tomatoes and your basil. And mix it all up, and it's the most delicious combination. And the anchovies, they don't taste fishy. This salad does not taste fishy.
No, it just sort of tastes like a nice salty.
It gives it that nice salty taste,
And your courgette with avocado and pecan pesto. Now, that's wonderful because, everybody's cooking with courgette, spaghetti. This was a lovely spiralized baby marrows make an interesting side dish or a starch-free substitute for spaghetti. I was actually just listening to a show earlier on, and they were saying how pasta is not the best thing to have at night and suggested courgettes. So go ahead with the recipe, please.
Yes, well, again, as you say, this is great. It's a vegetarian dish. It suits a lot of people. It's that starch-free, so it's very nice for that. And you can use it for lunches. You can have it as a light supper. You can have it as a side dish. You can basically do what you like with it. Again, make it your own.
Yes,
is what I encourage.
We've done the salad. We've done the side vegetable. Now we want to do a chicken dish.
Yeah.
What is one of your favorite chicken dishes?
I quite like, there are a few in here.
Yes.
I mean, I do them all, as you can imagine.
Yes.
You know, you tend to...
That coconut chicken curry with toasted almonds, that is absolutely wonderful.
Yes.
I must have to recommend this. Can I share it?
Of course you can.
Thank you. I've got to share this one. This dish is made best in advance. You see, I'm getting tongue-tied from the dentist. You allow the flavors to develop, and what you need is 80 grams of flaked almonds, a half a cup of ground almonds, 3 tablespoons of oil, 1 large onion peeled and sliced, 1 large clove of garlic peeled and finely chopped, 2 centimeter piece of ginger peeled and finely chopped, 1 chili deseeded and finely chopped, 2 to 3 tablespoons mild or medium curry paste or powder, 8 to 12 chicken thighs, skinned and trimmed of excess fat, and 3/4 cup of chicken stock and 400 ml can of coconut cream. Now, we can use coconut cream because it is parve, so you can make this dish with ease. So we need to toast the flaked almonds in a dry frying pan over medium heat for 1 to 2 minutes, shaking the pan to toast the almonds evenly. Then you transfer the pan to a small bowl and set aside. And you do the same with the ground almonds. Then you heat half the oil in a large saucepan over medium heat and fry the onions for 3 to 4 minutes until soft. Stir in the garlic, ginger, chili, curry paste or powder, and you fry for a further 2 minutes until it's lovely and fragrant. And then you add the remaining oil and the chicken pieces, coating the chicken in the spices. And while frying for a further 5 minutes, you just carry on tossing it and moving it around, and you pour in the stock and scrape up all the lovely bits at the bottom of the pan. And then you add half the flaked almonds, all the ground almonds, and the coconut milk. And you bring to the boil, cover, and simmer over low heat for about 35 minutes, stirring occasionally to prevent the chicken from sticking to the saucepan. Uncover and cook for a further 10 minutes to reduce the sauce. And you serve this with rice or crispy papadums or a little bowl of chopped tomato and onion and cucumber. And you can serve this with toasted almonds, fresh coriander, and fruit chutney. Now, it's such a quick and easy, delicious chicken dish. And I love the textures of the almonds. You know, the ground almonds that went, it just gave it that lovely...
It thickens the sauce a little
thickens bit. Thickens the sauce, yes.
And it gives, with the toasting, it gives that lovely, rich undertone flavour. So it goes really well in there. And then you've got the flaked almonds, which you put some in for texture.
Right.
And then you put the rest into a bowl to sprinkle on top later.
Uh-huh. Okay, so there you have this beautiful coconut chicken recipe. And going on to something beefy.
Yes.
What is your favorite beef recipe?
I love beef done in a number of ways, actually.
So yes.
I'm going to pick out the burgers are delicious.
Oh, okay.
Now, if you're going to go simple.
Yes.
But very simple and very easy and very delicious. And then you can make it your own with all the toppings.
Uh-huh.
So it's a kind of a deluxe thing. It's appearing on a lot of menus now in what used to be smartish places to go to, even in restaurants. They are now introducing the good old burger done in a variety of wonderful ways with extra things to go on top.
Yes, and I've noticed some very lovely, sophisticated weddings as well. They have these... Cordon bleu burgers,
as
they call them, with all the lovely sauces and the mustard sauce and the mushroom sauce. Mm. I see you go with my husband. This is the only argument we ever have. My husband says no cornflake crumbs or no bread crumbs in the beef.
No.
You go with him on this, I see.
I prefer the real, I prefer
the beef.
Pure beef. And then you can flavour it.
Yes.
I suggest a bit of Dijon mustard, but if you want to make it hot, you can put a bit of chili. But the main thing is, for me, is to keep the mix light.
You're correct.
Do not massage. In the old days, they used to massage the meat and really sort of move it around so that it would become almost glutinous in its own right. Now, that makes it into a tough burger and a more dense burger. You want it to be lighter and more succulent.
Yes.
So it's very, very little moving around.
But it also, I believe that it needs more fat than
it does, yes.
Than most of, you know, people tend to go for lean mince. Mm. And I say, no, the fat's going to cook out. It's going to drip out anyway into the braai or if you're frying it, it's going to drip out. But the taste of the fat is something delicious.
It's, yeah,
so don't be nervous when you see fat in your mince, guys. Don't be nervous.
Yes, it gives the succulence because it melts in.
Okay, then I loved your beef paprikash. The only thing that we would have to do is substitute the sour cream for a non-dairy cream.
Okay,
so, yes. I mean, that is a also delicious, simple, beautiful recipes, beautiful pictures, just lovely ideas, you know, and just the kind of book that you want to buy for somebody who's getting married or who's moving out of home and moving into their own place, which I've had this last year. My middle son and my daughter moved out. They both got married, moved into their own places. So I'm loving my dog at the moment.
Well, this book also, it's designed, you know, it was a progression. Because,
yes.
As with the daughters and your children as well, well, you're a grown-up.
Yes, grown-up. Yes.
You know, they're no longer students. They become young professionals. Or they start families.
Correct.
Or both.
Yes.
And so this one is more for the, it's progressed slightly from the first book.
Yes.
But still it's kept simple and within a certain amount of budget, but a little bit more lenience this time because they are earning. That's
right.
The idea.
Yes.
And so it's just helping them become good at entertaining in a very easy way.
Welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's Wife, and I'm chatting to Annabel Free, and we are talking about her two wonderful books, Help, There's a Stove in My Kitchen, and Help, There's a Guest at My Table. And I was actually saying just before the break to Annabel that I went to a kitchen tea recently, and it was absolutely wonderfully organized. What they did, you know, in the old days, I remember when you and I probably got married, we invited to kitchen teas and people, the mother-in-law would give a Kenwood chef and the other mother, the mother would give a blender and this one would give a hand processor. And this was a wonderful, wonderful idea. They got everybody to bring two tins of chopped tomatoes, a bottle of tomato sauce, just all of the things that they would need to start off in a kitchen. Don't you think that's a wonderful idea? Just to go back to our little menu for the evening, what about a simple dessert?
Well, soon mangoes are coming in. So
right.
I would make a mango cream as really a very quick dessert.
Right.
Where you simply take a couple of large mangoes, ripe. They've got to be beautifully ripe.
Yes.
You can't get away with a half-ripe mango.
Okay.
And then even sort of slightly wrinkly on the outside to make sure they are ripe.
Yes.
And then you chop them up, but keep a little bit for putting on top of your pudding.
Right.
And mix it with cream. Mix the, blend the mangoes.
Yes.
With a bit of lime, sugar if you like, if you've got a sweet taste, a sweet tooth. And then you blend those in a blender to make them smooth,
right.
And add some cream and blend that for a very quick whoosh because
you
don't
beat up the cream separately first and fold it in?
No,
pour it into the mango.
I just pour it in because the blender will actually whip it.
Okay.
So you've got to be careful not to over whip it.
You're right.
So give it a minute at most so it doesn't go too thick. You
right.
can just keep your eye on it, watch it.
And could we use Oily Whip, the non-dairy creamer, with this?
You could. I'm sure you could.
Yeah.
I'm sure. And then
quite well.
That's quite nice, yes. So.
And then would you just put it in the fridge?
Pour it into little glasses, serving bowls, whatever. Put it in the fridge.
Yeah.
And let it just cool. It doesn't need to set. It's already thick. And it's most delicious and very, very simple. And then when you're ready, you top it with the rest of the mango, little cubes of mango.
Yes.
Put some raspberries or some nice little fresh fruit on top. And you've got an instant, maybe even a little biscuity type wafer thing, if
right.
you like that sweet.
What a delicious dessert, and so simple.
Very simple.
And so effective, and just looks so pretty.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I must say, I'm absolutely blown away by your books. I love them. Nice. I'm going to be giving them to a couple of my friends' children who are moving out of home and to my children too. And just thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us and just having a wonderful morning talking about food.
Thank you so much.
Which we just love. So go out there, guys, and get help. There's a guest at my table. And the one that was just before that, help, there's a stove in my kitchen. Hi, I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's wife, and I've been talking to Annabelle Freer, and we're actually discussing in the break that what could be absolutely delicious with that mango dessert that she just gave us is blending it with coconut cream, just a small tin of coconut cream, and sprinkling it possibly with some granadilla, lovely tropical light dessert for this gorgeous hot weather that we're about to experience. And we're talking about, I mean, we have quite a few recipes here. We've got the spinach and cream cheese, we've got the coconut chicken, burgers, tomato salad, falafel, and we're talking about peanut butter, Marmite and fish paste being a staple on any young or new kitchen. So let me give you a quick recipe that I thought actually could be very nice for a book club as well. Back to the Marmite rolls. So I was saying that it's also delicious for book clubs. I know I have a few friends that often phone me and they say, Shah, what can we make for book club? Everybody makes such beautiful things. Well, you know what? Keep it simple. All you need is a 400-gram roll of puff pastry, thawed at room temperature. You'll also need about 2 to 3 teaspoons of Marmite, maybe a little more to get it right to the edges, and 2 to 2.5, your 3, you'll work it out. You'll judge how much cream cheese you'll actually need, and a little milk. Not cream cheese, sorry, grated cheese, and a little milk. And what I've like to do is just mix a whole lot of different cheeses together. So you can mix Roquefort and all those lovely, delicious cheeses that we can get at the moment. And all you do is you preheat your oven to 180. Simple. You unroll the puff pastry, and you pat it flat with your hands, and you spread a layer of Marmite over the pastry, leaving just about 1 centimeter free along one long edge. And then you sprinkle the grated cheese on top. And now, being us, we like to overdo it a little bit, or being me, so I put extra cheese on, and then leaving the same edge free at the bottom. And then I dab a little milk on the free edge, and then I rolled up the pastry from the other end, and then I glued the free edge down to create a long sausage shaped roll. I brushed a little bit of milk over the pastry and slice it into 1.5 centimeter thin rounds. And then you lay these flat on a baking tray. You can just oil them a little lightly in a baking tray, and you bake them for 25 minutes until they're golden brown. And you serve them immediately, and they are yum. So that is such a simple Marmite roll-up. Okay, so now we are going to go to a quick, another recipe that I love, especially for this hot weather, and that is the cucumber soup, which comes from Help, There's a Stove in My Kitchen. It's the first book. Cucumber soup, and what you'll need for this is a chicken or vegetable stock cube, or 1 tablespoon stock powder and 1 tablespoon boiling water and 1 cup of cold water. You'll need 1 large cucumber, English, washed and diced, 1 cup of plain yogurt, some mint leaves, 1 teaspoon of garlic and herb seasoning, salt and pepper to taste, and extra mint for garnishing. And all you do is dissolve the stock cube or the powder, whatever you're using, in the boiling water, and then you top it up with the cold water, and you blitz everything together in the blender, and you chill it in the fridge, and you just garnish it with extra fresh mint. And that's a delicious cucumber soup to have on these lovely hot days. Now, I said to you that I was going to come back to you with a recipe for Chanukah, and this is something that I call it a Mediterranean pizza, Why Mediterranean is because it's got all this lovely, it's got chickpea flour, and it's just so easy to make and so delicious, and you can actually choose all the toppings that you want in the world because it is a parve. And I shouldn't tell you now, you know, people will say to me, don't say it's gluten-free because then it sounds awful. It's gluten-free, but so delicious, I wouldn't have believed it. You need 2 cups of lukewarm water, 1.5 cups of chickpea flour, 1.5 teaspoons of salt. Start off with 1 teaspoon and see, maybe a little bit more. 1 teaspoon of finely minced rosemary leaves. That's optional. If you want to put some basil in, you can also do that. And 5 tablespoons of olive oil. And you divide it. You're going to use 3 tablespoons in the batter and then 2 tablespoons for the pan. And then it's actually quite easy. You just mix it all together. And so you also need a little bit of ground black pepper. You mix all the ingredients together and you set it aside for 2 hours. Now, apparently this is very, very important. You've got to allow foam to rise on the top of the batter. It's a very quite a liquidy batter, and the reason is they say that waiting 2 hours for it to foam up and remove the foam is that it can make that foamy bit can make you a bit bloated and a little windy. So don't say I didn't warn you. And then you have to preheat your oven to 230. So you really want it 230 centigrade. So you really want it high. And you're going to use a skillet for this. Now, I use my skillet with the lines on it because you need to be able to put the pan that you're using into the oven as well. So don't use something that's got a rubber handle. And you place the skillet on high first on the stove. You add those 2 tablespoons of olive oil that I was talking about in the beginning to the pan. You pour in the batter when it's got to be hot. You must almost see smoke coming off. Pour the batter in and allow it just to start bubbling. You remove it from the stove straight away and you stick it into the hot, hot oven for about 20 to 25 minutes until it really turns golden brown. And it's just best to serve that straight away. And if you're going to serve it with hummus and tahina and dipping sauces like that, what you do is take it out, put it on a board and just cut it into eighths or sixths or maybe into twelfths and serve it with whatever you want. I mean, last time I made it, I actually fried some macon and I put that on the top of each one. I still served it with an aioli garlic dip, and I still served it with hummus and tahina. But it's absolutely delicious. You have to try it. I think my time is coming to end. I have to wrap up. Oh, dear. Well, I hope my dental situation wasn't too bad. At least I got through the day. I shared a lot of recipes with you. And I will be back before Hanukkah, so we'll be able to share a lot more of one of my favorite ways of cooking. It's brying and frying. And remember, it's the Eat and Meet, and thank you for joining me.